Good evening. You're on the air with WRTH, broadcasting out of... And thank you for tuning in. We're back to the phone lines now here at the station, and we just spoke with Corrine in Dover, who's pretty certain that something is visiting her pottery room every evening. I'm looking forward to hearing from her again and see if she's got any updates on the weird things happening and the shapes in her clay. But for now, we've got another caller on the line. Good evening, sir. What's your name and where are you calling from? Hi, my name's Sean, and I'm calling from Southern Kentucky. Well, you don't want to get a little bit more specific than that, Sean? No. I don't think it'd be a good idea, at least not right now. I'm hoping you or one of your listeners can help me. I just don't know where to go or who I can turn to. Well, Sean, it sounds like you got a problem. Can you tell us a little bit more about it? I'm not even sure where to start. Well, the beginning is usually the best place. It's okay, man. You're among friends, and we're waiting to hear your story. Yes, well, it has to do with this house that I recently moved into only a few months ago. See, I got a promotion that brought me to Kentucky, and I didn't want to rent. I've got a pretty decent raise with the promotion, so I could easily afford a house of my own out here. And I looked all over the town, and I found a nice place out on the edge. Literally, I mean, the house sits on the edge of a forest. Oh, well, that sounds beautiful, man. It is, or it was. I mean, I love the house, but well, that's why I'm calling. Go on, Sean. It's a big house. Three bedrooms, two stories. It's an old house, but it's not ancient or anything. I love the fact that it sits on a 3-acre lot, and most of that is forested. You can hear the birds during the day and the tree frogs at night. It's not quiet, but all of the noise is natural, and I love that. The forest lands right at the back of the house. Like, I walk out my back door, and right there are the trees. Squirrels, cardinals, the occasional deer. It's just me and my dogs Rusty and Dobro. You know, plenty of space, you know? So, you're out on the edge of town, and are you well and truly out in the sticks? Mostly on the edge of town. It's only a few miles to the nearest grocery store or something like that. I go into town and meet a couple of co-workers for a beer, and the drive is only 15, maybe 20 minutes. But I like that. I'm a little removed, and out here you don't get the noise of the town or all the lights. You can look up and can see the stars through the branches of the trees. But then, I don't know. I mean, these things started happening, and I'm starting to wonder what's going on, if I've made a bad decision living out here. What kind of thing? See, that's what's so weird. It's hard to describe them without sounding crazy. I brought it up to some of the co-workers at the pub, and they thought I was crazy. I wound up laughing it off as a joke, but... Well, let me guess, Sean, these things aren't funny, are they? Exactly. So, the first weird thing I can think of happened about a week after I moved into the house. I remember it clearly, because it was the first day I'd gone back to work after the move. The place was a mess. Boxes everywhere, you know? I didn't know where things were going, so the unpacking was going to take some time. That morning, I got up, took a shower, I shaved, I grabbed a little breakfast, and I left. The dogs have their own door into a fenced-off part of the yard, and they can take care of themselves throughout the day. Later that day at work, I was talking to a co-worker, and they're native to this area, born and raised here, so they asked where I moved to, and I told them, and I said, you know, that's when I learned the house had a name. Your house itself is named? Yeah, it's kind of a thing they do around here, especially if it's a big house or unique or something. When I told her my address, she described the exterior of the house to make sure she was thinking of the right place, and I told her that she was. Oh, she says to me, you moved to Tanglewood Hill. I was confused for a second because that's nowhere in the address or anything. She told me that's the name of the house, which I guess that makes sense. There's, you know, a big forest out behind it. It's very much a Tanglewood forest. I asked who named it that, and she said she didn't know. It's been called Tanglewood Hill ever since she could remember. She had a friend who grew up about half a mile down the road, and she'd regularly go by the house when she was a kid, when she was going to visit her friend. Anyway, I thought it was kind of cool, having a house with a name. I thought about it on the way home that night and figured I'd get a sign made. You know, something to go above the door with the house's name on it. Seemed kind of fitting. I opened the door and the dogs looked up from the couch and they jumped off and pounced on me. That's their typical way of welcoming me home. What kind of dogs do you have, Sean? Well, Rusty, she's a Labrador mixed with something else, God knows. Dobro's a smaller dog, like a pit bull or a bull terrier, I guess, and they're both rescues, and they're wonderful dogs. They didn't act weird or anything, which kind of made this whole thing even stranger. Well, what happened? That's just it. I don't know. The first strange thing, now that I think of it, are the door locks. I'm home alone most of the time, but I don't lock my doors while I'm here. Every time I go out and take the trash, or let the dogs out, or run an errand, any time I need to use an outside door, they're almost always locked. But I never lock them while I'm here, not unless I'm going to bed. I wrote that off as maybe I'm being absent-minded, forgetful, moving stressful, you know, got this new job, I'm you know, probably just losing a little bit. The house was a mess of boxes, man, and packing materials, and I had to unpack. But I moved most of the boxes into the rooms that made sense. So all the bedroom boxes were in the bedroom, office boxes in the office, that kind of thing. When I walked into the kitchen, I saw three boxes stacked up in front of the door that leads outside. But I didn't do that.
You didn't stack the boxes like that in front of the door?
No, and I know I didn't, because the box on the bottom of the stack, that was the paper plates and the plastic silverware. I've been grabbing dishes and utensils out of there all week. Not only did I not stack the boxes like that, even if I had, I wouldn't put that box on the bottom.
What did you do after you found the boxes like that?
Well, at first, I just wrote it off. I convinced myself, yeah, maybe I did do that. After all, there's no one who's been to the house other than a couple of people in HR and the coworker I talked to that day. There's no one who knows that I live here. No guests, no friends, no one has been over yet. But the dogs would have absolutely destroyed anyone breaking in, and they certainly would have been able to stack those boxes, man. I mean, no one's here but me. So I thought I'd stacked them up and just forgot about it. I made myself some dinner, and I didn't think of it again until the next day.
The next day?
Yeah, I got up in the morning and went downstairs, and damn things were like that again. Stacked by the door, like they were blocking the door.
What, to keep something from getting in, Sean?
No. Actually, I had a weird feeling it was to keep something from getting out. I don't know why I'm thinking that, but just seems to be the case. But this time, I had a good old-fashioned freakout. I ran back upstairs and I grabbed my gun. I searched the house, all of it. I even looked in the crawl space. And I kept looking at my dogs, and they were sitting on the couch the whole time. They don't know anything's wrong. They're not acting like anything's wrong. My lab, she'll go nuts if a squirrel runs through the yard, and I have to lock her in a bedroom if the doorbell rings. I mean, she's not made a noise, man. And I drove to work wondering, maybe I've started sleepwalking?
Oh, well, do you think that's the case?
No. No, I don't. I never have before. There's no reason I should start now. When I got to work, I talked to that co-worker again. Asked her if she'd ever heard anything weird about the house, about Tanglewood Hill.
Had she?
Well, she said she couldn't think of anything. She told me that she always thought the house looked a little spooky, but as she got older, she figured that was just because it sort of blends into the forest. When she go by it at night, all you could see were the windows, brightly lit and standing out in a dark forest. She's right about that. I take the dogs out at night for a quick walk, and when it's dark, it's dark. I leave the lights on just for some guidance on where the house is, and it's like these windows are just kind of hovering in the dark.
Well, has anything happened since that morning?
That's what scares me. Look, I'm just going to tell you. I'm upstairs in my office right now. And I'm up here because I can't go downstairs. Why is that?
I know this sounds crazy, but because the boxes are down there, and I hear them. Something is shuffling across the floor, but there's no one here but me. Who's moving around downstairs? What's doing this? Is my house haunted?
Well, I couldn't tell you that over the phone, Sean, but you probably don't believe me. I can't prove it to you. This is stupid. I'm sorry I called.
No. Wait a sec, Sean. Wait a sec.
I'm not sorry you called. I'm not going to ask you to go downstairs, but can you see anything from the upstairs? Anything that might be making those noises?
I don't think so, but let me go to the top of the stairs.
No, it's dark down there, but can you hear it? Sean, I really think you should call the police. This sounds like...
Why bother? I know that when I get down there, there's nothing there, but the boxes will be...
Oh, my God.
Sean?
They're against the doors. All the doors, every single door, they're blocked by the boxes. What in the hell is going on? What's happening here?
John, who is that?
Every damn door has boxes shoved against it. The back door, the side door. My God, what in the hell?
Sean, I heard another voice on the phone. Is someone else there with you?
What? No one's here. These damn boxes. You heard what? What'd you hear?
I heard someone else on the phone, but maybe it was just static.
Sean, are you okay?
No, I'm not okay. Something is in my house. Oh, Jesus.
Okay, Sean, look. I want you to call the police. Hang up and call the police. Call me back if you want, but you need to get someone out there to help you.
Okay, fine. I'll call them, but I have no idea what I'm going to tell them. I'll call you back, sure.
Well, that was certainly different.
Okay, we're going to take a break, and we'll get in a word from our sponsors, and we'll be right back. This is WRTH AM 800. Thanks for tuning in.
Welcome back, friends. You're listening to AM 800 WRTH, and we've just gotten off the phone with Sean in Kentucky. Honestly, it's one of the most compelling calls we've ever gotten here at the station, and I'm sending out my hope that he's okay. Speaking of the paranormal, I want to take a quick look at the strange history of a ghostly game created by an influential and groundbreaking studio and how it arose from the popularity of a seemingly unrelated phenomenon in popular culture. In the early 1990s, vampires enjoyed a resurgence in popularity thanks to a novel originally published in 1976. Now, I know what you might be thinking. I thought we were talking about ghosts, not vampires. What in the heck does a vampire novel have to do with ghosts? Well, hold on, and follow me on this journey. Everything will become clear. See, in 1976, a new author from New Orleans by the name of Anne Rice published her debut novel titled Interview with the Vampire. The novel did fairly well at the time. It wasn't a runaway bestseller until over a decade and a half later, when it was adapted into a movie starring Tom Cruise and Brad Pitt that was released in 1994. Only 3 years before that, White Wolf published the first entry into their World of Darkness series of role-playing games, a book titled Vampire the Masquerade. At that time, another big vampire movie was playing on the silver screens. Bram Stoker's Dracula, directed by Francis Ford Coppola. It too received mixed reviews, but you could say it primed the pump of success for White Wolf. Dracula was overblown, maybe a bit campy, but in a good way. The performances were overly dramatic, but they're not to the point of melodrama, and audiences thought the movie was entertaining. Perhaps just a bit intriguing. Like maybe they want a little bit more of this. Then, in 1994, Interview with the Vampire brought a new persona to vampires. One that Dracula had tried for, but fell just slightly short of realizing. Gary Oldman's portrayal of Dracula bounced between sexy, terrifying, and then almost downright goofy. If you've not seen the movie, you really need to look up a picture where Dracula has a butt for a hairdo. Believe me, you'll know what I'm talking about when you see it. Interview with the Vampire toned things down and simplified the vampires to where they could be terrifying and sexy, but they left out those goofy bits. While Lestat and Louis could display a sense of dark humor, it was just that. Dark. These were dark creatures who did dark things. They were dangerously beautiful and alluring. The movie-going audience feasted on the idea more than the main characters gorged themselves on blood. The popularity of vampire novels exploded, and the world rediscovered the books of Anne Rice. Another audience, those into the tabletop role-playing games, discovered White Wolf's World of Darkness along with Vampire the Masquerade. It became a true sensation, and that success laid the groundwork for White Wolf to expand upon their series. Vampire was followed by Werewolf the Apocalypse, Mage the Ascension, and then the main focus of our discussion, a game called Wraith the Oblivion. In the world of Wraith, players take on the character of someone who has recently died, who finds themselves tied to the physical world as a ghost. These ties are called fetters, and they can be represented by people, objects, places, and so on. As it happens, the afterlife is just as fraught with danger as the living world. The players may find themselves dealing with evil spirits, chaotic beings, and specters, agents of chaos from the heart of the tempest, a roiling sea of chaos that lies at the soul of the Deadlands. As you might expect, Wraith carries a similar theme and tone to the rest of the World of Darkness games. In every game in the series, the player's worst enemy is often themselves. Vampires fight against the beast, trying to maintain a sense of humanity even though they've long moved beyond the guise of being human. Werewolves are at war with their rage, a gift of madness that bestows supernatural abilities but could lead down a path of dangerous insanity. The Wraith must fight their shadow, a dark side of their spirit that seeks only self-destruction, the Oblivion referred to in the title, Wraith the Oblivion. Even more engrossing for the game's players, the persona of the shadow is usually taken on by another player. This removes the shadow from the player portraying the Wraith and puts them at the mercy of someone else. When things go dark, you don't have control over what your shadow can do to you. You can only fight against it. Wraith is a fantastic read for fans of the paranormal because it dives into the otherworldly reasons that ghosts exist, why they do what they do, and the powers they can harness. Wraiths can channel their passions into manifestations of actions in the real world, and it's these passions that they draw upon for the very reasons that they remain tied to the world of the living. A protective ghost may use an ability called Outrage, which gives the player poltergeist-like powers to throw things and do physical harm. Or they may inhabit the dreams of their loved one through an ability called Phantasm. But for me, one of the most interesting things to come out of Wraith the Oblivion is their explanation for something applied to ghost story after ghost story, a trope in supernatural horror and paranormal entertainment. The ability of a ghost to walk through walls and other solid objects. It's an ability that goes right to the foundation of the Deadlands, where things are literally held in place by the persistence of memory. So, there are times you'll see that Wraith walk through a wall because when that Wraith was a living person, there was a perfectly good door there. The passage of time and the desires of the living may have remodeled or otherwise covered that door, but to the spirit, the door remains because it was there when they left, and their memory remains. In the Deadlands, entire buildings and houses can exist within other structures, twisted in bizarre arrangements. It's said that you die twice, once when you pass away, and again when the last person to remember your name also dies. The Deadlands are built upon the memories of the living and the dead. Within the world of the game, the ultimate goal for many wraiths is transcendence, to leave the Deadlands and move on to another afterlife, whatever that might be. And as spirits leave the shadow, their memories disappear with them. Their world fluctuates, and the memories remain until they're gone. Thanks for tuning in, and good night.